fast response times can help you beat the dealer down the street. Get a tool that can respond to your leads in 15 seconds or less and help you book test drives 24/7, nights and weekends, so you can sell more cars. Podium's AI BDC is a conversational AI employee who sells, schedules, and talks with customers day and night and sounds like your best sales rep. Transform potential interest into sales today with Podium. Visit podium.com/dailydrive. That's podium.com/dailydrive.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem.
Welcome to Daily Drive for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I'm Jake Neer in Detroit, in for Jamie Butters, who's on assignment.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, Stellantis avoids plant closures by paying a supplier that was protesting price hikes. We're now in the era of five-figure EV discounts as inventories balloon, and Rivian announces more job cuts. Plus, the managing director of the M-City test facility reacts to a report that casts new doubt on the future of autonomous driving.
You know, they're warning that, hey, the value of autonomy is really unknown and potentially negative. And I agree with what they're saying.
We'll hear from M-City's Greg McGuire in a few minutes, but first, let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
Stellantis has avoided plant closures, and its attorney says it did so, quote, under hostage threat. The automaker made a $100,000 payment under protest to a supplier that threatened to stop shipping parts because of a cost dispute. The automaker paid McLean Fogg Component Solutions of Illinois to keep pinions and gears flowing to a pair of factories in Kokomo, Indiana. The plants build transmissions for the Ram 1500, Wrangler, Grand Cherokee, Charger, Durango, Pacifica, and a dozen other vehicle platforms. The disputed payment is intended to keep operations running until a court order is made in a lawsuit filed by Stellantis against the supplier.
Bloated electric vehicle inventory is pushing automakers and dealers to slash prices. Many discounts now reach far into double-digit percentages. Nissan is offering almost $16,000, or nearly a third, off its Ariya electric crossover. And that's before any state or utility rebates for buyers depending on their location. According to Cox Automotive, Mercedes-Benz is cutting the price of its EQS SUV by more than 19 grand, a 19% discount. Cox Director of Industry Insights Stephanie Valdez-Streedy says, although the cuts will hurt automaker profits in the short term, moving inventory will probably help with long-term adoption of EVs.
I think it's one of those chicken egg things, right? We need to scale to get more profitability, more efficiencies, and so I think it's going to take some time. But I think there's some OEMs are probably getting there quicker than others.
Cox says automakers discounted EVs nearly $6,000 on average in the first quarter. Although it says some dealership reported incentives may include the federal tax credit if it was applied at the point of sale.
Rivian will cut another 1% of its workforce. It's the second round of job reductions this year. The move comes about 2 months after Rivian slashed 10% of its salaried staff. High interest rates and economic headwinds have been adding to the company's ongoing challenges with scaling production. The last round of cuts focused on product teams and those working on its commercial EV business. The latest move will mostly affect support and back office workers.
And General Motors is preparing to begin sales of bi-directional charging technology for residential customers. It will start with the 2024 Chevrolet Silverado EV RST First Edition, which is the first vehicle to have that capability. GM Energy is the automaker's business unit for electric vehicle and energy management products and services. It will sell bidirectional chargers that can power GM's electric vehicles and also send power back to a home. The bidirectional chargers will be available nationwide, but the equipment required for vehicle-to-home energy transfers will be offered beginning today in just five states to start: California, Florida, Michigan, New York, and Texas. GM said it expects to expand to more states. And those are today's headlines. Coming up, we'll hear from M-City Managing Director Greg McGuire about the onslaught of challenges for self-driving cars and pickups. That's next on Daily Drive.
Fast response times can help you beat the dealer down the street. Get a tool that can help you respond to all your leads in 15 seconds or less, 24/7, nights and weekends. Check out Podium's AI BDC, a conversational AI employee who sells, schedules, and talks with customers day and night with human-like communication. Your response time to leads is crucial. With your new AI BDC, you'll engage with leads fast, increasing the chance of selling a car to 45%. Customize your AI BDC to what your dealership needs and start booking more test drives. Sell 10 to 15 more cars per month by connecting quickly with leads over text. Visit podium.com/daily drive. Again, that is podium.com/daily drive.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jake Neer with Kellen Walker. Automated vehicles may never reach their promise of delivering a safer future for the traveling public in a widespread way. That's one conclusion from a technical brief issued this month by the Association for Computing Machinery, the world's largest organization of computing professionals. Greg McGuire is managing director of M-City, a connected and autonomous vehicle facility at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. He spoke with our own Pete Bigelow on Shift, a podcast about mobility. They talked about the brief, as well as M-City's view of ongoing infrastructure challenges for connected and autonomous vehicles. Here's a piece of their conversation.
You mentioned before, you know, avoiding infrastructure in some way versus like developing infrastructure. Is that just a recognition that if you need to deploy something that requires infrastructure, you're talking about like a 30-year project or generational project where you're waiting for federal funds that build infrastructure versus doing something more software defined now?
Yes, short answer. I think the longer answer is one of the challenges of connected vehicle technology was always this chicken and egg thing, right? Where, okay, we want to have all the traffic signals connected and, you know, the IOOs, you know, the cities and municipalities and things have to go deploy all this hardware out in the world to make that happen. And the automakers are sitting back waiting like, okay, well, you know, 10 intersections in Ann Arbor is not a compelling reason to go put this technology on cars. So everybody's kind of waiting for the other one to act. And I think that's translated over the few decades into a kind of an unsuccessful attempt so far. But meanwhile, we've got the cell industry who's, you know, now there's hype in there, right? 5G and, you know, if you believe the cable companies, 10G. But, you know, the march of cellular technology improvements continues to where now, like, you know, latencies are 10x lower than they were in previous generations. Bandwidth is 10x higher. The density of devices, and so the ubiquity of these things can be 10x better. You know, maybe the ultimate acid test is like, can I scroll social media while I'm at the University of Michigan football games in the fall? Then you'll know that we're ready. But, you know, there's a business model for the development of that stuff, and it's that infrastructure exists. And so I think a lot of what we're looking at now is like, what's out there that we could get to large scale adoption of interesting systems, maybe that there's business models for, that people will pay for because there's value and safety can come with it, or other benefits can come, you know, along in the slipstream. And that's what I think is the really interesting things that we're doing now.
As you look at that, is M-City now more entrepreneurial in that way where you're working with startups to evaluate what is viable in the future in a meaningful way? Is it primarily working with big automakers and other companies, or who is the scope of who you're serving and working with right now in that sense?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Of course, we want to serve and help everybody, government, industry of all shapes and sizes. But we're really thinking about M-City as this, the thing Greg Stevens coined, this maker space for mobility innovation, right? A place where, you know, you can come and develop the systems, the approaches in a scaled environment. Yeah, there's a test facility here. It was really built to test cars in the early stage, in the early days. But we're realizing now it's actually kind of a perfect city proving ground. You know, obviously my budget is limited. I don't have 40-story skyscrapers and things, but we do have a lot of municipal infrastructure, you know, traffic signals, crosswalks, storm sewers, detention ponds, lots of different kinds of roadway and street lights. So it's a place where you can try out all these new ideas. And so what we're really focusing on now is being a convener for industry to go after some big ideas with the federal government, with our state, who's been a huge supporter. You know, the National Science Foundation has given us a large grant to actually take the makerspace. So the test facility, but also kind of all the digital tools we've built for that. You can do a lot in simulation now. Have you seen, did you watch like the NVIDIA recent week?
Yes, from GTC.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So, you know, like with Omniverse and things, I mean, the amount of kind of impressive development that you can do now in software is needed, but it's also really incredible in how much it expands every year. So, you know, we've built an open source set of HD maps and simulation environments and all kinds of, even down to like, you know, modeling human behavior in our facility that you can use and develop with. And so, you know, we've got faculty doing studies on flood mitigation with, you know, internet connected valves on ponds. We've got some new low carbon concrete being tested, you know, that's self-healing. And so it needs maybe half the thickness of normal concrete on the roadway. We put in a site last year for MDOT and Electrion's dynamic wireless charging road, which we can talk about in a little bit, I hope. But I'm really excited about its public transit use, you know, and so there's some really interesting kind of adjacent things that we can support now that if we think about this makerspace a bit more broadly, you know, that we can do.
Well, I will come back to ask you about that, but I did want to ask you, like, in terms of the data and scenarios and maps that you're generating, is that like used in a collaborative way, or do you have to generate specific things for each company? And do they want to kind of keep things siloed, if that's the right way to think about this, and proprietary?
Yeah, I think, you know, they do want to keep things siloed. And actually, that's one of the big projects that Greg has been working on is this, you know, I think Tesla maybe coined this term, but this concept of a data engine. You know, if you think about data collection of 10 years ago, you know, data sets were static. I went out, I had my fleet of vehicles or my infrastructure, and I collected a data set that was based on parameters that I specified. But now, you know, we're in an era where a lot of these software algorithms are really AI trained models, and they're outperforming very quickly, you know, hand curated human built algorithms that took a decade or more to build. You know, a team can stand up with the right data in a week, they can be outperforming. Now, there's some problems with that. We can get to that in a minute. But the way that happens is with a data engine, something that can go and collect a base set of data, then a large intelligent offline AI model or human assisted can label. But then that engine goes around in a loop. That's why we're calling it engine, but it's an iterative cycle. And so the system says, well, I'm missing this data. Let's go get this data because we don't have enough of it. You know, there's not enough rain in our data set for crosswalk pedestrian detection or something, right? So we got to go get some rainy days. And so the system can actually go and collect that. You know, that's the very powerful thing. I think Tesla first talked about this, right? Is, oh, well, we're stopping for Burger King signs because we thought they were stop signs. And I, you know, you and I have talked about this before, but it's like, okay, that makes for hilarious Burger King commercials, right? The AI is so smart, you know you were hungry. But the reality is that's a potential safety issue. And so, you know, the answer is, well, we need a lot more images or video or LiDAR, whatever our sensors are, of Burger King signs and stop signs in all these different conditions. And then our, you know, giant model that's sitting back in our data center can churn through that. So they can task their system with going and collecting that. And that's a pretty powerful thing. It's also incredibly expensive to build. And so this is an area where these silos, I think, are being formed, Pete, because of the cost to do these. I don't know if you've seen like venture capital now. Some of these VC firms are actually like buying compute clusters for their companies, the startups that they're invested in, you know, which tells me that we've got some bottlenecks and some barriers being built. And so one of the things we're looking at with this, with a data engine, we have this pretty good set of infrastructure sensors that are in Ann Arbor. We've got some in Oakland County. We've been talking to our state about the systems that they have out there. Can we assemble this into a data engine that could be usable by small companies, startups, academics? We'll focus on Michigan. That's a, you know, Michigan resident, born and raised, lifelong. So my bias is here for sure. But I think generally this is an interesting opportunity to build something then that has, that helps get rid of those barriers for innovation.
This is an interesting and timely discussion in this sense, because I don't know if you saw the paper this week from the Association of Computing Machinery, but they put out a tech brief kind of on the state of autonomy overall. But one of the key points they made was there's a need for better training data, a need for better crash data, a need for all of this to be more transparent and open if an automated age is really going to flourish. And this is the organization that bestows the Turing Award.
Right.
They kind of pointed out all these other problems, but this idea of data and high quality data is I think very timely. And what you're talking about, I think, really speaks to that in a way that MCity could potentially help solve that.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I'm an ACM member. So I have a biomedical engineering degree from 25 years ago in computing and medical imaging, which is strangely relevant now in transportation. But I think that brief was exactly right. You know, they're warning that, you know, hey, the value of autonomy is really unknown and potentially negative. And I will say this is something that MCity has said. It's great to hear this being said in a more rigorous way, especially by an organization like that. I agree with that, with what they're saying. I think the absence of standards around testing these systems, the complexity of testing AI models, because of course, when those things fail, they don't fail in ways that are reasonable for humans, right? You can't reason about them in the way that you would have, you know, with a logical stepped algorithm to say, oh, you know, we didn't handle this one case when the windshield wipers were on or whatever. No, it's like the inputs are reasonable to you and I, but the AI model is out over its skis and it's hallucinating. Can I anthropomorphize?
Yeah.
AI? Okay. And so, you know, I think that's one of the things that we've been working on a lot still through the years. We've got this MCity safety assessment program that we've been developing. Think of it as a driver's test for machines, for the robots. It's a two-part system. One is a set of scenario tests, which would be more like your driver's licensing for a human. You go down to the Secretary of State and, you know, are we proving that the system is safe? No, we can't do that.
And we don't do that today with humans.
And we don't do that today. Exactly. But we are showing it at least has a basic level of competency that, you know, enables it to handle situations that it needs to be able to on the roads. Then the second phase is the one where I think ACM's talking about data sets and these things are really important. It is a much more, it's a set of AI trained actors actually that are based upon human failures in the real world that can give you a very high frequency, high volume set of dynamic scenarios to test against. So, you know, as you drive around, for example, in our closed test facility, there's several hundred people, but these are really AI actors in there with you in a simulated or a mixed reality. And they're behaving in ways that match all of the kind of crashes that we see, in situations that we see human mistakes made in. Because, of course, that is the vast majority of what's out on the driving around in the world. And so, a mile in our test facility, you're going to experience 10,000 miles or even 100,000 miles worth of real world situations. I think some set of regulation, whether that's, I said the R word, but whether that's, at the federal level or self-certification, like we do with a lot in our industry with SAE standards, or somewhere in between, third party like IIHS, we need some set of tools that we can work on together. Because I think otherwise, there isn't a way for the public to understand the seriousness and the safety dedication of any individual company who's out here working on these things. Some are doing a pretty good job. Some are doing a phenomenal job. Some are doing a pretty shoddy job, but they look the same to you and I if you're not, have an NDA with them or, other things. And so that's what the MCity Safety Assessment Program, we're trying to build this thing as like, this could be a model. We don't really care how it gets used, but this could be a model for public trust, and we need something.
You can hear our own Pete Bigelow's full conversation with MCity's Greg McGuire on Shift, a podcast about mobility, wherever you get your podcasts. That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jake Neer, in for Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to automotive news journalists Hannah Lutz and Lindsay Van Hulley for their reporting for today's podcast. We also have reporting from Kurt Nagel of our sibling publication, Crane's Detroit Business. You can get the latest news on autonomous driving, automaker disputes with suppliers, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for a conversation with Joe Shaker of Shaker Auto Group about the importance of impactful vehicle inspection videos.
That video allows us to see and understand, and customers get to hear from the doctor, not the receptionist.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.